now more than ever, people need to go within and plug into that cellular memory, plug into divine source, detach as much as possible from the matrix. A lot of these people that have all these abilities, who have celestial star ancestry, they're operating not only throughout this cosmos, but in higher planes, and they're working against the Draco Empire. Photonic energy and the cosmic rays will activate our higher centers. And it's incumbent upon us to ride that frequency wave. Hello again, everybody. This is James Bartley, and you're listening to Bartley's Commentaries on the Cosmic Wars. Today, I will be talking about Antarctica. In the recent past, there's been a lot of discussion about Antarctica as it relates to a possible UFO alien disclosure. Antarctica also figures in to the flat Earth meme that's been going around for some time now, which I do not ascribe to the flat Earth theory. Antarctica has always been a continent shrouded in mystery. Think of the Peary Rice map, which showed Antarctica as being ice-free sometime in the past. We know that the U.S. military sent a task force down to Antarctica after World War II, the famous Operation High Jump, commanded by Admiral Byrd. Apparently, the task force had to turn back after it was attacked by advanced craft. And of course, this ties in also to stories about the Germans setting up bases in Antarctica. We know that they had set up bases and entire communities in South America. Some of these South American German expatriate communities were extremely German, and some would argue, aside from the different kind of climate and terrain, some of these communities were more German than German, right? So we know they had gotten at least as far down south as South America. So it would be no stretch to see them going a little further down to Antarctica, especially since we know that the Germans had had long-range U-boats. They utilized these long-range U-boats for a variety of missions in World War II, including blockade running, meeting their Japanese submarine counterparts in the Indian Ocean, in the Pacific Ocean, and offloading equipment and technology, etc. So they're is probably truth to the notion that Germans had gotten as far as Antarctica. And we know that there have been stories of, in the recent past, pyramids, and I'm going to talk more about that. I'm going to talk about some of the findings that myself and my German colleagues came up with when we were remotely viewing Antarctica a few years ago now. It's actually been a while, more like several years at this point. But long before we started hearing all these stories about pyramids in Antarctica, our team, the Germans I was working with, we had independently, remotely viewed and astrally traveled to some of these pyramids, and they seemed to be, or they were, in a highly energetic, active state. And it should come as no surprise that there are pyramids in Antarctica. There are pyramids on every other continent in the world. So why shouldn't there be pyramids in Antarctica? It only stands to reason. And also, the public, especially the science fiction watching public, have been prepped over time to this notion that there may be or had been an advanced civilization in Antarctica at some point in the past. We had episodes in Stargate SG-1, and then the spin-off, Stargate Atlantis, that had everything to do with Antarctica. I'll talk more about that. There's the connection Antarctica has to the whole disclosure movement. So there's a lot to talk about. I remind the listeners that there was a fellow at one point, and I don't know if he's still with us. His name was Joseph P. Skippers, and he had the excellent website, the Mars Anomalies Research website. There was a lot of great imagery, overhead imagery, satellite imagery of Mars, the surface of Mars. There was very good imagery of the gigantic structures on Mars, the large tube thingies on Mars, but also pages on that website devoted to anomalies on Earth, like large cities beneath the ocean. If memory serves, I think it was offshore of the western shore of, was it South America? Yeah, I think it was South America, but don't quote me on that. It could have been Africa. It was one of those two continents, but the overhead imagery showed what seemed to be a very large city beneath the waves there. And also, there was a whole section in the Joseph P. Skipper's Mars Anomalies Research website, which is no longer available, I might add, unfortunately, a whole section devoted to Antarctica. And some of the images I thought were really interesting. There were color images of what amounted to, or what seemed to appear as, a vast green glass field, just a huge amount of terrain, and part of the image was smudged, of course, but the parts of it that you can still see, you get an idea of the depth and the scale of the, not necessarily the depth, but the scale of these glass, seemingly glass green fields. Whether it was like some kind of crystalline substance, or it didn't look like vegetation. It didn't look like moss at that distance. We're talking about overhead imagery here. But it looked like just a large field of what seemed to be green glass, which is interesting. And they had tried to smudge out a lot of that, but they were unsuccessful, or for whatever reason, they decided to not do the job thoroughly. But the point of relevance is that someone or something went to great trouble, or maybe it wasn't that much of a hassle for them. Someone went to the trouble of creating a big honking field of what looked like green glass in Antarctica. And then we have the whole issue of pyramids, like I talked about earlier, the bases down there. Now, for purposes of a comparison, and also to draw parallels with, let's look at the other pole, the North Pole, the Arctic Circle. Some researchers, if memory serves, Tony Dodd, the late British researcher, I believe he was a former constable, and if it's the same guy I'm thinking about, he had had an encounter with a landed craft in Skipton, near York, in Yorkshire, England. And anyway, it was, you know, he was inspired by that experience. I think he was taken on board. He became a quite thorough UFO researcher, and some of his sources in the British Ministry of Defense, in the Royal Navy, and in other NATO navies told him that the NATO fleets, including the United States Navy, were encountering alien craft, UFOs, quite frequently in the Arctic Circle. And we've heard similar stories. The testimony of retired Air Force Colonel Wendell Stevens, and he told the story many years ago. He was a former test pilot, and he was assigned by Air Technical Intelligence Center, if memory serves, to be part of a project based out of Alaska where they would load down all these B-29s, B-29 Super Fortresses, with still camera, still photography, as well as motion picture cameras throughout the inside of the craft, or rather the B-29s, and they would fly around in the Arctic Circle area, based out of Alaska, and their job was basically to get imagery of alien craft. And apparently they did this for a while, and they had a lot of imagery to show for it. Wendell Stevens said that every week, every month, they would put all of the film and the still photography and the negatives into a chest or a suitcase, and it would be handcuffed onto a courier, high-ranking officer, I think a colonel, and then they would fly back to America. I can't remember whether he said they flew back to Washington, D.C., Wright Pat, or some other place. But that is corroboration for the later testimony that was provided to Tony Dodd about the naval fleets that were encountering alien UFO activity in the Arctic Circle. And then we have stories going back to 1950, either on Spitsbergen or an island near Spitsbergen, Norway, a crash retrieval of an alien craft. Apparently that happened as far back as 1950. So the point being is that in the Arctic Circle, there was a lot of this alien activity. And the flight crews and the naval vessels would sometimes see craft coming out of the water, quite large craft sometimes. So it's not surprising that similar activity would take place in the Antarctic, in the South Pole. Flat Earth researchers, cover your ears. Blasphemy, blasphemy. So that's a key point to remember, that the stories and the information coming out of Antarctica, that these things don't happen in a vacuum. There is a direct parallel to what's going on in the Arctic Circle, in the northern pole of this planet. So let's keep that in mind. There's an alien presence on all the continents of this planet. So I want to make a point here about perspective, right? A lot of the exopolitics types, a lot of the disclosure types are talking now about how Antarctica will be disclosure, that somehow, some way, Antarctica is going to figure in the disclosure process. And whether, as some suggest, like Michael Sala, I was listening to an interview he did with Freeman Fly, and I think, if memory serves, the sources that Michael Sala was quoting from mentioned that if they do announce something based on findings in Antarctica, one or more of his sources told him they're likely to say that it's not aliens or an advanced alien civilization, the remnants of that they found there beneath the ice in Antarctica, but rather an advanced human civilization, right? Human can describe a number of ET races, so-called Palladians, Nordic beings, etc., etc. But if they want to kind of make it a limited hangout, give the people, the TV watchers, like a bite-sized chunk that they don't gag on, they may tell them that, well, yes, they found proof of an advanced civilization that goes back hundreds or thousands of years or even further back, but no worries, these are human people or were human people. They just happen to be very advanced. And by saying that they found proof of this in Antarctica, it's something that they can keep at arm's length. It's kind of like a radar report of a radar signature of a UFO. It's kind of a pilot sighting of a UFO. Interesting. Nothing you can really sink your teeth into, no matter how spectacular the pilot sighting is or how tangible the proof is in the form of a radar return. Because there's always a lot of people out there who say, yeah, but, you know, what does it really prove, right? It's something that's still at arm's length, non-threatening, non-confronting. And so the whole, let's release something, let's disclose something, let's throw them a bone based on Antarctica, it still has that element of being at arm's length. And also, especially if they say that there's proof that they found of an ancient advanced human civilization, it's like cud for them to chew on, right? The TV news watchers. They don't have to say anything about an alien race, a group of beings that look nothing like us, that would maybe cause some heartburn or worse for a lot of people. Now more than ever, we have to be mindful of the signal-to-noise ratio. All these alleged whistleblowers coming forward, all these sources coming out, all these videos coming out on YouTube about what's going on in Antarctica, right? And I do believe there's an alien presence there, just as there's an alien presence on every other continent on this planet. That's not to marginalize or downplay the significance of what's going on in Antarctica, but we have to look at things in proper perspective. If the powers that be, in all frankness, in complete sincerity, told the public worldwide what was going on underground beneath, say, Edwards Air Force Base in the high desert of Southern California, that engineers and scientists and military people, aerospace engineers and specialists, on a daily basis beneath Edwards Air Force Base were interacting with non-human life forms. Okay, that blows the lid right off, right there. People will be freaking out. But why weren't we told? What does this mean? People are going to get scared. Is it possible that similar ongoing interaction with non-human life forms is going on beneath McMurdo Station? Well, quite possibly. It's happening in North America. It's happening probably in just about every continent on the planet. Deep black elements of the military or secret societies or some corporate faction somewhere is interacting with non-human life forms. So why shouldn't that happen in Antarctica? But I just wanted to mention that thing about Edwards Air Force Base to put this in proper perspective. If the powers that be were to even tell a fraction of what's going on in the underground bases, Dulce, New Mexico, Edwards Air Force Base, China Lake, and any number of underground bases that people don't even have a name for, well, that blows the lid off right there. So let's not push all of the chips on the table into the roulette square marked Antarctica, okay? So let's just keep that point in mind. Let's keep it in proper perspective. There's a reason why John Kerry, Skull and Bones has been going down there, had gone down there. There's a reason why the Vatican has sent representatives down there. There's a reason why there's all this heightened security down there. If there is a faux disclosure, a limited hangout, a throw us a bone kind of disclosure emanating out of Antarctica, again, it keeps it at arm's length. That's even more of a at an arm's length, not so threatening as even the disclosure of Area 51. Area 51 never had an official disclosure, but many people who were interested in this subject, especially after Bob Lazar came out in, what, 89 sometime, 89, 90 time frame, and many of us have gone out there to Rachel, Nevada, and many of us have gone out there by what used to be a black mailbox until the owners of the property got tired of their black mailbox being stolen for souvenir purposes. They painted it white, last I heard. People have gone out there by Groom Road and seen all kinds of things. Jordan Maxwell, his story, which I find utterly believable, he and another guy who I'd met, his name is Paul, if memory serves, they went the wrong way. They went the opposite direction, away from the site that a lot of people go to, and they got lost and they pulled over and were trying to get their bearings. And then out of this big cloud bank flew several large ships, right? Several large craft. But the point of relevance is that Area 51 is still out there at arm's length. A lot of people can't be bothered with going out there and seeing this for themselves. What's the activity that's going on out there? And I do believe it's disinformation. When you hear people like Stephen Greer say that, oh, they just like uprooted the entire operation there at Area 51 and moved it off to Utah, that's nonsense. Because there's an alien presence at Area 51, and they're not going to leave because Stephen Greer says so. That's patently absurd. Okay, so Antarctica would even be more remote than Area 51. More remote. So they can make up, they can weave any kind of story they want, the powers that be. And because of the heightened security down there in Antarctica, because of the inability of people to just go down there on their own, right? A lot of UFO hotspots in the world, South America, Chile, Argentina, Peru, Bolivia, Brazil, etc. I mean, people can get to these places, but, you know, good luck getting down to Antarctica unless you're part of some weird science project, the military, or a MyLab, and I'll get to that in a moment, a little later on. So let's do what we can to separate the noise from the signal. There's going to be a lot of people talking about what they know or think they know about Antarctica. Let's keep it in proper perspective. There's all kinds of stuff going on in North America right now that if people knew the truth would blow the whole lid off of all of this. So Antarctica isn't the be-all and isn't the end-all, but something big is going on there, which is just part of a much larger pattern, obviously. So this needs to be kept in mind. We still don't know if the story about Buzz Aldrin saying something about Antarctica is even true. He said something big and scary is down there and we have to be worried about it. And it could just be more Chicken Little, right? Get everyone freaked out, get everyone scared because a big shot like Buzz Aldrin, who for decades has made a career out of debunking the whole UFO thing, like the good Freemason that he is, right? So I'm not going to suddenly change my attitude about him because supposedly he throws us a bone and tries to scare us about something big and scary emanating from Antarctica. There's no way to prove he really made those comments. He really tweeted those comments. And it's completely at variance with what he's done in the past. He's been a consistent and persistent debunker of the whole concept of UFOs and aliens, despite what some of his fellow astronauts have said about UFOs and aliens. People like Dr. Edgar Mitchell, I've talked about before, and also Gordon Cooper, who's been very vocal over the years about the reality of the alien presence here. Buzz Aldrin has been steadfast in his debunking about aliens and UFOs. And suddenly now he's going to be chirping and piping up about something to do with Antarctica. I'm not buying it. I was dubious about that from the moment that story came out. Let me talk a bit about the episodes of Stargate SG-1 and how it segued into a whole spin-off called Stargate Atlantis and how that has played a role in prepping people about the whole concept of Antarctica. In season 7, I think it was, Anubis, of all names, that this Goa'uld system lord, actually he's half ascended, half Goa'uld, makes him even more powerful, named Anubis. And of course, those of you familiar with Kemetian magic, Egyptian esoteric, ancient magic and cosmology know that Anubis is connected to Sirius, the dog star Sirius, the Sirius star system. Anyway, in Stargate SG-1 in season 7, Anubis is going to invade Earth. He's going to either wipe out Earth and wipe out all the inhabitants or take them up as slaves or whatever he was going to do. And by slavery, basically implanting people with a symbiote, a reptilian snake entity, and taking people up as a host. But I think in this case, I think Anubis just wanted to get rid of the people of Earth. So SG-1, of course, has to step into the breach and stop this from happening. Now, I think in the first season, Colonel Jack O'Neill, he inadvertently wound up having the entire knowledge base of the ancients, a super advanced human race, right? Remember, we were talking earlier about how they might come out with this story about finding a proof of a super advanced human race in Antarctica as a kind of limited hangout, throw us a bone kind of thing. But in season one of Stargate SG-1, Colonel Jack O'Neill inadvertently wound up having the entire database of the ancients downloaded into his brain. He had a very interesting experience, to say the least. He would have died had it not been for a race of gray aliens called the Asgard who healed him of that problem. Well, fast forward to season seven, and along the way, Dr. Daniel Jackson has figured out that there was a super advanced race that they called the Ancients, who were the gate builders. They're the ones that built the intergalactic Stargate system. And according to the information Daniel had picked up along the way, somewhere there was a lost city somewhere in the cosmos that possibly contained a super advanced weapon with which they could defeat Anubis and thwart the invasion of Earth. So Colonel O'Neill voluntarily subjects himself once again to this downloading process, and he gets the whole knowledge base of the ancients downloaded into his brain for the express purpose of figuring out where this lost city was so they can go there, find the weapon system, bring it back to Earth, and defeat Anubis and his invading alien fleet. Okay, spoiler alert if you haven't seen it. Long story short, they find out where a power source is on a distant planet. They go to this planet, and they found out about this planet through the downloading process in Colonel Jack O'Neill's mind. They go back to Earth, plug this power source. They call it a ZPM. They find, it turns out that there's an ancient outpost in Antarctica, right? Turns out that there's a base that the ancients established countless millennia ago in Antarctica. They take this power source that they brought back from this distant planet, plug it in, power up this ancient base in Antarctica, power up a weapon system, and wipe out the invading fleet of Anubis. And then that became a spin-off to Stargate Atlantis. But you see, they're already planting seeds in people's minds about the existence of an alien base, and in particular of a super advanced human civilization having an alien base beneath the ice at Antarctica. And then, like I said, they created a whole spin-off that lasted for a few seasons. I happen to like Stargate Atlantis. I thought that was a pretty good show. So now we have countless people out there, sci-fi fans. It's in the forefront of their consciousness that, yeah, there's, you know, a great TV show out there, and there's aliens and alien bases beneath Antarctica. And it's a short hop from there to a public announcement. And what's funny about some people that are in the sci-fi, a lot of them are skeptical about aliens and UFOs. It's a weird disconnect, which I was never able to quite understand. But once an official announcement goes out saying, oh yes, we found evidence of a advanced civilization of humans beneath Antarctica, well, all these sci-fi fans, all these Stargate SG-1 and Stargate Atlantis fans, they're going to say, oh yeah, you know, we knew that, right? So, a limited hangout, planting seeds, predictive programming, so-called. Okay, let me tell you a bit about what I learned in my sessions with the Germans, quote-unquote. The Germans were a small group of highly gifted remote viewers, psychics, healers, that I had the honor and privilege of working with a number of sessions via Skype. And the gal that I really admired and really held in high esteem, still do, her name is Martina. And unfortunately, because of the amount of Draco harassment, interference, manipulation, spiritual warfare, reprisals, Martina had to retire from the field. But I would rate Martina as being a world-class mystic, world-class seer, world-class remote viewer and healer. She had to get out of the field because of all the interference and manipulation and spiritual warfare attacks she was being subjected to. Now, on some sessions, we would have an object in mind. We would go into it with a certain intention that we wanted to accomplish something. Maybe one or the other of us were having certain challenges, whether it was energetically, spiritually, health-wise. Maybe some of us were receiving a lot of spiritual warfare, reprisals, or interference. And then we would all pull our resources together, energetically, spiritually, psychically, and do what we could to provide healing, protection, buck up the auric shields of a given individual. Like say, okay, today we're going to work with so-and-so because she's been having a lot of challenges recently. Drax have been messing with her and whatnot. And then on other occasions, we would choose to go back in time, if you will, and heal somebody from a past life issue or an energetic attachment, energetic cord issue, energy attachment issue, whatever the case may be. So it varied. And sometimes we'd be working and we didn't have a specific goal in mind. We didn't go into it, okay, we're going to do, combine our psychic energetic resources and help so-and-so, or part of our small group. We just kind of went with the flow. Martina being the primary visionary. And also, tip here, folks, Martina always worked from the heart center. She was the one I learned the whole concept of working from your physical heart space, your energetic heart center. I recently had George Kavassilis on the show, another friend I want to get on the show one of these days, a colleague of mine. Does a lot of work with primal heart therapy. I'd love to get her on the show here at some point. Anyway, Martina worked from the heart center. And sometimes we would just kind of wing it, an ad hoc Skype session, so to speak, kind of ad-libbing it. Okay, we would just follow Martina's lead wherever her spirit guided her if we didn't have a particular objective in mind. And on one such occasion, spirit guided her, her higher self, her oversoul guided her to Antarctica. And she said, okay, I'm paraphrasing here. I'm trying to remember what she said. All this is being translated in real time into English. And she said, okay, I'm above a very large pyramid in Antarctica. And it's active. It's powered up. Is generating a lot of energy. I'm feeling a lot of energy. And she was saying her whole body was shaking and she was doing everything she could to stay grounded in order to stay in this experience. And she was able to ground herself, be able to detach from all the energy and just view. And what she described was a humongous pyramid in Antarctica that was already powered up. And then another one of our German colleagues projected himself or herself to the same place where they could observe it, but still not connect to the energetic field. And they were giving us their impressions of the pyramid, the energy, what they felt it was doing, what they felt it was there for. So this concept of not only pyramids being present in Antarctica, which kind of I took for granted anyway, also in our sessions, Martina and our other German seers talked about a heretofore undiscovered very large pyramid in Mexico somewhere that was likewise powered up. I don't know if it was the same pyramid that a photo was taken of two young daughters standing posing in front of a pyramid and energy beams shooting up from the top of the pyramid. Can't remember where that was. It was it's a famous megalithic site somewhere in Latin America, either in Guatemala or Mexico. I think it's in Mexico. But I don't think that the pyramid that Martina tuned into in Mexico was the same one. I think it was somewhere else. And it seemed to me at the time that a lot of these pyramids were being, and sacred sites, megalithic sites, were being powered up. Whether it was an old grid that was being reactivated or a new grid superimposed over an old grid, whatever the case may be, some of these pyramids and megalithic sites and sacred sites, stone circle sites, were being powered up. So when these stories start coming out years later about pyramids being found in Antarctica and some of them being energetically active, I was already familiar with that concept from my sessions with the Germans. Here's another thing to consider too. Some of the MyLabs that I work closely with have talked about being taken beneath Antarctica. And there have been some alleged whistleblowers who've talked about being taken to Antarctica. I'm not talking about any of that information. My information from my labs is vetted. I vet these people personally. I know them personally. In some, many cases, I've known them for many years. And these are people that are not prone to hyperbole, over-exaggeration, or lying. These are people that I trust implicitly. Now, it must be understood, folks, that when my labs are told things by their handlers or controllers or military people, and the my lab relates that to us or relates that to us in a private meeting, relates it in a lecture, whatever the case may be, we have to be mindful of the fact that the controllers, the military people, may be lying, may be deliberately sowing disinformation, may be deliberately not telling the whole story to the MyLab. We know just from surface level ops, black ops, espionage, counter-espionage, special operations, black ops on the surface. We know that the controllers, the handlers, the taskmasters that send these spies, spooks, and special operatives out into the world to do this, that, and the other, that oftentimes they don't tell them the whole story. In fact, in many cases, what they tell their operatives, their field operatives, is a tissue of lies from beginning to end. Their attitude is, we don't have to tell these operatives, these spies, these spooks on the ground, the truth. We just want to tell them enough, maybe even deliberately tell them lies, so they do our bidding and they carry out our missions. And in many cases, it behooves the taskmasters, it behooves the controllers to not tell the truth. And then the spooks, the spies, the operatives in the field, they find out the hard way that what they've been told isn't the whole truth. They find out once they're there in the field and everything goes to hell in a handbasket that they've been lied to. Okay? So if that happens on just surface level black ops, surface level special ops, surface level spying, espionage, counter espionage. Of course, that kind of thing will happen when it comes to the weird science ops, the MyLab ops, the secret space ops. Let's keep all this in mind. So when a MyLab tells me, or when I have my own kind of experience, and a military person or a controller is telling me something, I don't necessarily take it on board, okay? Because my ego cannot be activated. If someone's trying to make me think I'm special and I'm at the epicenter of events and I'm a big shot and I'm a super soldier. No, I don't buy that. Doesn't work on me. So we must keep this in mind. When my labs relate certain stories or information, they've been told by military people, by their controllers, by their handlers, oftentimes when they're in a mind-controlled state, we have to kind of intuitively determine what they're being really told. Sometimes it works best to think in opposites. Okay, if they told this MyLab, who I trust implicitly, this, and this MyLab, who I trust implicitly, relays that to me, and me and the MyLab, we have this discussion, we try to sort out what it really means, because the MyLabs that I'm in comms with, we don't just take anything at face value. We don't just believe what the military tells us. We've been around the block too long. Call us cynical, call us what you will, but we don't just believe whatever we're told. Whether it's a big shot military general, some person in a general's, admiral's uniform, doesn't matter. We make up our own minds about these things. Okay? And some of the MyLabs that I'm in comms with have been taken, or believe they've been taken, to Antarctica, taken to an underground base. And what they've been told really is not much different than some of the information that we've heard thus far. That there does seem to be German technology that had been left over, that had been left there, secreted there, many decades ago, that for its time, and especially compared to the surface world, surface level of technology is quite advanced. And the MyLabs say that, yeah, there are underground bases there, and there are ancient civilizations that have been there, and alien bases and an alien presence there. And there are other things which I'm waiting for more confirmation on. So the point of relevance is I've also heard from MyLabs that they've been taken to Antarctica, taken underground, that there is a deep black weird science military presence there. But I'm still in the process of finding out more. And what I can share with you, well, I'll let you know, okay? Because I'm not one of those types to just pass on innuendo or pass on information that may be disinformation. If I had inadvertently passed on information in the that's not truthful or is not exactly 100% accurate, I'll tell you. Because it's entirely possible that even people that I vet and know and trust implicitly may have been fed disinformation specifically to tell me about it, so I turn around and tell you about it. So it would be a disservice to my listeners if I were to just to swallow whole whatever I've been told, and uncritically, with lacking in any discernment at all, turn around and pass it on to you. Because then I'd just be adding to the noise. Remember I talked about the noise to signal ratio, the signal to noise ratio. Suffice it to say for now that I do know my labs that have, who feel they've been taken underground to Antarctica. And from some of my sources, I've also understand, which is not surprising at all, that surface level elements of special forces of certain nations have been taken. They're not surprising at all, because you would want people with certain specialist skills for security, and especially if they find something that is needs protection, security, or maybe they find something there in Antarctica that may pose some kind of a latent or potential threat. Yeah, of course they're going to want operators with specialist skills to be there on site. So the moral of this story, folks, is watch out for limited hangouts, watch out for feel-good stories, watch out for fake news or fake information disseminated by alleged whistleblowers. Go within, trust your own inner guidance. And if you're in my lab, likewise, be very discerning about what you've been shown, what you've been told. And remember to think in opposites. So it's what the point I was trying to make earlier, but I got sidetracked that, okay, if someone or something is trying to make me believe this, let me stand it on its head, think in opposites. Maybe I'll derive more clarity from looking at it from a different or an opposite perspective, hence the term thinking and speaking in opposites. One other point to consider about Antarctica. We've heard so much about the possibility of a hoaxed alien invasion, of a false flag alien invasion. Were that ever to happen, an ideal place for that would be Antarctica, because, as I mentioned earlier, it's tucked way, way down in the bottom of the planet. There is virtually no media coverage there. Hardly anyone gets there who isn't allowed to be there. So they can create an entire movie, basically. Create this whole Hollywood CGI scenario. I mean, folks, if people believe that a plane crashed into the side of the Pentagon, right? And they try to do these Jedi mind tricks. They had this big shot military analyst, ex-military guy, talk about the film footage of 3 or 4 seconds of film footage of the what looked to be a missile hitting the side of the Pentagon. And then this moron military analyst says on the lamestream media, this proves all those conspiracy theories about the Pentagon and 9/11 are unfounded. And then when I look at that video, I see like a white blur coming in from the right, but looks for all the world like a missile, and then a sudden explosion, all right? I don't see a big honking 747 or a 757 crashing into the side of the building. But that military analyst, the lamestream news, were trying to do this Jedi mind trick. You don't see this missile coming in from the right of the screen and hitting, impacting the building. These aren't the droids you're looking for. Carry on. You can go now, right? If they can do that, say it with conviction and think they can get away with it. And look at Sandy Hook. Complete false flag hoax. There hadn't been a utility bill issued there in that school for years. Everything was fake about it. Boston Marathon bombing, fake. Aurora, Colorado, fake. No planes at 9/11, that's my firm belief. There would be no reason to complicate the operational scenario. Even using drones, why would you use drones? That would just complicate the operational scenario when you can simply tell the TV news droolers that planes crashed into the buildings. And then you have the fake backstory, which Daryl Hamamoto and I talked about, set years back, where supposedly the Philippine National Police, Philippine Intelligence, came across a hoard of documents left behind by Ramzi Yosef, talking about Operation Bojinka, where all these tangos, terrorists, were going to hijack a bunch of planes, start crashing them into landmarks of Western decadence. Okay, that was the backstory. And then you had the Armed Islamic Group, GIA, and their so-called plot to steal a bunch of planes and crash them in the Eiffel Tower, etc., etc., more of a backstory. And then fast forward to 9/11, right? No planes were crashed into the Twin Towers. You don't have to believe that. That's what I believe. Why complicate the operational scenario? And especially the official story of these morons who could even get little Cessna Cubs and little single-engine planes off the ground. We're supposed to believe that they can get these multi-engine airliners, fly them, and then somehow navigate through a forest of skyscrapers and hit their target. That's so Hollywood, it's ridiculous. So if people will believe that, right, people will or like the fake Bin Laden operation, just complete nonsense, right? If people can believe that, they'll believe a fake alien invasion, fake alien attack happening against a naval fleet. A kind of a replay of the whole Operation High Jump with Admiral Byrd. They can believe something emanating out of Antarctica. It's out of the way. They can make up any story they want. So keep that in mind, folks, that if there's going to be a false flag alien event that's touted by the government or the powers that be as being real, it wouldn't surprise me if it happened in or around Antarctica. All right, everybody, that's this week's segment of Bartley's Commentaries on the Cosmic Wars. Wherever you may be, dear listeners, daytime or nighttime, we hope you have a very pleasant time, and we'll see you again next week. Bye for now.